Saturday morning to you. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob Hall, along with Beth Guckenberger. Good morning, Beth. How are you?
Good morning, Rob. I'm doing great.
How are things in Monterrey, Mexico this morning?
You know, they're warm. I'm sitting outside. It is absolutely beautiful. The sunrise is happening over the mountains here in my little town. It's amazing. What about you? Got any snow over there in the Midwest?
It is beautiful here in Cincinnati. I hope it's beautiful wherever our listeners are this morning, driving around, taking the kids to practice, getting up, I don't know, laying in bed. It's early. It's Saturday morning. So, you know, I hope they're doing well. It's a crisp, clear morning here in Cincinnati.
Aren't the stores all open in the United States? We're like 2 weeks before Christmas, so lots of people might be on their way shopping.
Well, it could be. I have no idea. I will shop on Christmas Eve. That's how it works.
You will? To get, like, the clearance item or just to, you know, build?
No, it's the whole excitement of the whole thing, you know? It's like, if you start shopping now, it's like Christmas is over a week before it even started. You got to wait a little bit.
Because all of Christmas is about shopping?
That's what it seems to be for everybody else. I mean, that's my point, you know? It's not for me. By the way, we have a great show today. Who is booking our guests? I need to know who's booking our guests. Who is that? Is that your new fabulous assistant, Jenna?
It is, yes. But she's taking some recommendations, and this one was highly recommended.
Yes, highly recommended by yours truly. Todd Henry is going to be with us. He is the author of The Accidental Creative, How to Be Brilliant at a Moment's Notice, which is basically my personal textbook. We'll introduce Todd in a little bit. I just needed for listeners to know that this is going to be a fabulous show. They are going to think, oh, I'm not creative. I don't need to listen to the show. I'm not an artist or whatever. You need to listen to the show because I'm a research analyst, and this book is for me. So if you might not think that you're a creative person, Todd is going to change that. He is going to convince you that you, too, are an accidental creative. So that's going to be our show today. He is one of my favorites, so I just need people to know so they don't tune out once I start bantering about Christmas.
Okay, Christmas, I know you're in a school setting. Are kids all, like, kind of crazy, ready to get out? I know, don't.
Yes, it's Christmas party time, and so they all, you know, it's like sugar cookies and every possible thing you don't want your kid to eat happens at school Christmas parties, and they eat them in this gigantic quantity, and then you're locked in a building with them for like 7 hours. It's not really conducive to education, but it's part of the deal. So anyway, so it happens.
Oh, yes.
What happens in Monterey? Does it feel like Christmas in Monterey when it's like 86 degrees out? I mean, can you still feel like Christmas when it's that?
Yeah, absolutely. We got lights all over the palm trees, and there's something called a posada. And anybody, any of our listeners who know anything about Latin countries, in Christmas time you have things called posadas, which are kind of like progressive parties. You start out going to one house, and then you pick up the friends at that house, and you go to the next house, and you go to the next house. And at every house you eat a little bit more. And I am a big Christmas caroler. I've pretty much forced my children the Christmas Carol every year of their whole life, which they still...
Yeah, I bet you they love you for that.
Yeah, my high school son is like, I still don't get it. We knock on their door, we let the cold air in while they stand there and listen to us poorly execute a few Christmas carols. And then they're supposed to... We don't tell them we're coming, they smile, and then they're supposed to feel good about it. I'm like, absolutely they feel good about it. But posadas kind of feel to me like a Mexican version of a Christmas Carol party. It's fun. It's super fun.
As long as you say so. For the introverts in the crowd and for some of your children who are introverts, I'm sure that that's a terrifying experience.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, I think they're going to love me for it when they grow old. But, yeah, we also had a big Christmas party this week where I introduced the concept of white elephant to all my Mexican friends. It took, like, 7 versions of an email for them to get. Like, we picked something nobody really wants. And we wrap it up. I don't know. How does that work exactly? But it was very fun.
Yeah. Someday, do they have a translation for white elephant? I mean.
Oh, no. So then, you know, of course, I'm putting Elefante Blanco in the email. And they're like, what exactly does that
mean? We do not understand Elefante Blanco. What is this?
No, it doesn't work so well. But it was a really fun night. So I had some
good. Well, I know in our Where in the World is Beth Guckenberger segment, you were in Haiti this past weekend.
I was. I just got back a few days ago.
Yeah, we talked about this. Yeah, we talked about this, you know, in the last couple of days. It sounds like this was a really powerful trip. You've been there a couple of times, but this one there were some pretty powerful things going on. Tell me about that.
Yeah, you know, I whenever you have any kind of experience, right, there's a few images that kind of stand out among all the rest of them, at least for me when I'm trying to wrap my brain and my heart around some international experience I have. I try to focus on one or two moments I hope to never forget and then really figure out why it is that those images have captured me. And we went to this. One of the things that's disheartening for me, frankly, about Haiti is that it's the densest population of registered NGOs anywhere in the world. But a lot of folks came in after the earthquake and now have moved on because there are relief organizations and there are other tragedies around the world. So that is absolutely no fault to them. But in their wake, they have left projects that I'm sure at one point they felt like were completed, but because there was no real community development around them, they've been abandoned. And so we went to a couple, one in particular, a watering hole, where there's a natural spring up from the ground. And at one point there was a reverse osmosis system to help create clean drinkable water from this water spring. But today what there is a large kind of pool of water that people drink out of and cook from and wash and bathe. And there were hundreds of people around it. And laying right in the middle of it was a bunch of livestock, pig and cow, you know, defecating, not even 6 feet from where people were drinking the water. And it was about as shocking of an image as I can experience. So it was definitely something I'm still trying to unpack.
You told me something when we were talking on the phone when you got back that, you know, you've been to India, plenty of places in Mexico, you know, some of the slums. I'm getting ready to go to Guatemala. To La Limonada, the largest slum in Central America. You said that your trip to Haiti, that Haiti is the most desperate place that you've ever been. That's saying a lot.
Well, I've been all over Africa. Yeah, absolutely. There's no doubt that Haiti to me feels, because it's hard to understand, you know, a lot of what we do is try to help create opportunities for education and try to create opportunities for leaders to be able to pop through the top and rise up nationals to do all kinds of things. And I sat there in that watering hole and thought, we could, you know, give one of these folks a PhD, and where are they going to go to work? There's just not a lot of industry there. It's just, it's hard, but on the bright note, in the midst of all of that, I was traveling around with a herd of Haitian teenage boys that live with one of the missionaries that I care so much about there. And these boys are going to high school, and these boys do have a vision for their future. And they, where I looked around and felt kind of paralyzed to inactivity, they looked around and saw opportunity. And one of the guys said, we have a meeting on Tuesday at the church, and I'm going to be talking about, you know, all kinds of things. Like, those young men were so heartening to me. And I just, you know, I'm kind of affectionate, and I don't always, like, keep all the cultural boundaries. And I just walked around and kissed every one of them on the forehead and said, you know, I believe in you. You know, it was maybe as awkward as the Christmas caroling moment we just talked about a minute ago. I just bent their little heads, sweaty heads down and kissed them and said, I believe in you and what you can do here. And I believe in you and what you can do here. And I do so much care for the people of Haiti. But yeah, but it was an impactful trip for sure. I'm still trying to put my words to it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it sounds like a powerful trip. I'm excited someday soon to join you there. I know Back-to-Back is beginning to work in Haiti as well, and so I'm sure in the weeks, months to come, we will be talking a lot more about Haiti and all kinds of other stuff. So I just knew this was a particularly powerful trip that you had, and so I figured we better bring that up. And it's amazing to me, you know, that it just, you know, in this hemisphere, that we just don't hear as much about Haiti perhaps as we hear about other places. It really is amazing. Well, we're going to shift gears after all of that. And as I mentioned earlier, Todd Henry is with us, the author of The Accidental Creative. And I'm just telling people, they need to listen. They are going to be surprised. This is an awesome book. And don't change the radio station. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob Hall with Beth Kuchenberger. We'll be back right after this break.
He found shelter under the rock and lay there, looking at the stars. God, do you remember me? In Tales of the Not Forgotten by Beth Guckenberger, Joel dares to ask for what he can't have. Serafina sacrifices what she can't afford to give. Ibram looks for an answer buried out of reach, and Christina, saved by a mission, searches for her own. Follow these life-changing stories as they take you on a journey to faraway lands and unfamiliar faces. Travel through their challenges and see the hand of the great story weaver writing endings you'd never imagine. These are the tales of the ones the world doesn't see, tales of the not forgotten. In Tales of the Not Forgotten, learn how God is the great story weaver, weaving the threads of our lives into a strong and beautiful sign of His love. Check out Tales of the Not Forgotten book and missions materials by Beth Guckenberger. For more information or to purchase, go to your local Christian supplier or visit standardpub.com. See lives transformed.
Welcome back. This is Real Life Real Talk. I'm Rob Hall, along with Beth Guckenberger, and our guest today, Todd Henry. And I don't know if you picked it up, if you've been listening at all, that I'm a little bit excited that Todd is here. So let me pull out my notes here. Todd is the founder and CEO of Accidental Creative, a company that helps creative people and teams generate brilliant ideas. He does regularly speak and consult with companies, both large and small, about how to develop practices and systems that lead to everyday brilliance. I love that word. Everyday brilliance. Who doesn't need that? Todd's work has been featured on Fast Company, Fortune, Forbes, HBR, which is HarvardBusinessReview.org, U.S. News and World Report, and many other media outlets. And this book has been called one of the best books to date on how to structure your ideas and manage the creative process and work that comes out of it. That who gets these guests? I don't understand who gets these guests. Todd, welcome. We're glad that you're here.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Good. Hey, as we were mentioned during the break, there may be some folks out there in our listening audience who don't really know you and don't know the book. Tell us a little bit before we get into the meat of the book, a little bit about you, about how did the Accidental Creative come to be? I guess one question as you're getting there is, when did you first discover this creative? I'm a pretty creative guy.
Yeah, well, like most stories, it's a long and winding story, right? So I'll try to be brief. But I grew up in a small town, and there wasn't really a lot to do, So we kind of had to figure out how to entertain ourselves. So when I was very young, I discovered that I have this tendency to try to make things and create things and find ways of entertaining myself that maybe some of my friends didn't necessarily have, right? Went off to college and for some reason decided to study marketing in school. I still don't exactly know why I studied marketing. It was just kind of the thing to do, right?
Right.
And found this tendency, again, to kind of be a through line, right? And I never really quite saw things the same way that all of my peers did.
Right.
And then when I graduated from school, like any good marketing major, I did my tour of duty in the music business, right, as a performer, as a singer. And kind of went into that whole space. And I think the through line, through all of that, the early part of it was just I realized, I think I tend to see the world maybe just about a 25-degree turn from everybody else,
Not completely different.
Not completely different, right. Yeah, exactly, I think that allowed me in some ways to kind of look at some of the things that some of my friends and some of my peers were doing and kind of look at it from a slightly different perspective. I think that's always kind of been helpful to me because I've been able then to help with one foot in that world, one foot in sort of the where are you coming from world. I've sort of been able to help people understand, hey, if you take this thing you're looking at and turn it about 25 degrees this way, then you're going to unlock all kinds of things that you didn't realize were there just beneath the surface. And so that's always kind of been a through line, I think, in my life and in my work.
Yeah, yeah. And so the question then comes, even before the college thing, did you find yourself doing creative stuff, or did this sort of just, as a result of sort of going into marketing, you realized that you had this in you, or did you always sort of have that little slant, that 25-degree slant on things?
Well, I think, and this is kind of, the core of the reason that I ended up writing the book is I think there's a bit of a misunderstanding about what creativity is. And I think a lot of people don't see themselves as creative because they think that being creative means, oh, I'm an artist, right? Or I'm oil painting, or I'm building crafts, or I'm doing something like that.
Right.
And in reality, I think it is the reason I told the story about all of the kind of early experiences I had is I look at the through line of that. Most of it was not about craftiness or about music or about these artistic pursuits. It was about problem solving. And I think at the root of it, I've always had a love of problem solving, of trying to solve puzzles, trying to figure things out. And some of the most creative people that I have met, you know, some of them, of course, are artistically gifted. Some of them have these amazing abilities or aptitudes in music and design and other things. But there are amazingly brilliant entrepreneurs. There are people who are, believe it or not, brilliantly creative accountants, which maybe we don't need quite so many brilliant creative accountants right in the world. Maybe that's why we're the problem.
Yeah, unfortunately, maybe we had too many creative, brilliant accountants, but who knows?
But these are people who are amazingly adept at solving problems. And, you know, I think that when we look at what creativity is, we have to ask that question. It's not about can I create art so much as, you know, how adept am I at solving problems and taking a lot of different things and weaving them together into something that forms an elegant solution to the problem I'm facing. And I think a lot of people, once they start looking at creativity that way, I think they realize, well, I'm significantly more creative than I thought I was originally. So I think that's really at the heart of it. I think that's always kind of been the through line in my life and my experiences, whether I was, you know, in the music business, whether I was in the creative space, working in creative services, working with other folks and trying to help them discover their creative process. And now, obviously, what I'm doing now, working with companies and other people trying to help them do that. That's always been the through line is, you know, how do we help you understand that creativity isn't just about art? Creativity is about problem solving as part of it.
I like that.
And what you know, that 25-degree pivot, that's really fascinating to me. What kinds of things prevent us from making that pivot? If it's not natural for us the way it seems to be natural for you, but we know we need to do it because we're stuck in some place, what holds us back from making that kind of shift or slant?
I think there are a lot of reasons. I think one of the biggest problems that or pitfalls that people fall into is that we're really good at developing assumptions about how things have to be, right? And those assumptions become habits, and those habits become ruts. And pretty soon, we're so deeply entrenched in the way that we've always done things that we simply can't see outside of that perspective, right? We can't see things from any other way than the way that we're doing it. And one of the most important aspects of creative problem solving is defining the problem, and sometimes that means stepping back and asking, "What am I really trying to do here?" You know, but we don't do that because we have deadlines, right? We have pressures that are bearing down upon us, and you know, and so we're afraid. We're afraid to step outside of that rut or that trench that we've dug for ourselves. And a lot of times we're just confused about what it is we're really trying to do. And I know that sounds incredibly simple, but I often find that people haven't really thought much about what am I really trying to do, whether it's in my life, you know, a specific problem I'm trying to solve. People haven't really stepped back and looked at the problem they're trying to solve enough to really get their mind around it and leverage their full creative potential to solving the problem they're trying to solve, you know. But I think at the heart, one of the biggest problems is this fear thing. And I think fear is, in many ways, you know, a terrible foe as it relates to the creative process, because I think that fear causes us to shrink back. Fear causes us not to engage fully with who we are. And there are a lot of different ways that can play out, but the biggest way it plays out is just a fear of failure. You know, we have come to believe, I think, that failure is the worst thing that can happen to us. And when that happens, we stay safe, we stay close to the middle, we stay in those trenches, those ruts that we've dug for ourselves, and we don't venture outside of that. And when we're afraid to take small calculated risks in the pursuit of trying to do great work, we find that even the work that we're doing, the stuff that we should be able to do, like nothing, you know, it should be just so easy to us.
Yeah.
We begin to lose our capacity even to do the things that should come easy to us.
You used a phrase there that really struck me, small calculated risks. When I think of, like, I have to be creative, I have to solve this problem, it's like I got to come up with something just so gigantic to get me out of this. But that phrase seems to lend itself to a small step in a different direction can get you out of a rut. You don't need to come up with something gigantic to be creative.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it, you know, I tell people it's a lot like when you're orienteering, right? If you're out in the woods. I did this exercise once with my team where we're out in the woods and we had these compasses and we had to sort of navigate from point A to point B, and we had a set of directions that we were following. And you know, early on in the process, I noticed that my team seemed to be kind of a little bit askew from where everybody else was. Everybody else seemed to be kind of like, oh, if you're plotting us on a graph, everybody else is kind of all hovered together, and we're like off here to the side somewhere.
Right.
And of course, in my mind, I'm thinking, hey, we're the only team, right?
Of course.
You know?
Confident.
Yeah, that's right. And, man, you guys are, you know, I can't believe this. And what I discovered was that one of our very early directions that we were following was slightly off. And over time, that small little, you know, thing, that small mistake led us to where we were so far from where everybody else was going, right? And I think that, first of all, the point of the exercise was confidence and was following the directions. It wasn't, you know, and I think that we're so afraid that that's going to happen to us, right? If we take these small little calculated risks, we're so afraid we're going to end up away from where the herd is.
Hmm.
And so as a result, it kind of creates this group think in organizations where everybody's watching everybody else and trying to stay close to the herd, trying to stay close to where everybody else is going, because you know, everybody knows the tallest blade of grass gets cut, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wants to stick themselves out there and take a calculated risk. But the reality is that great advances in our world, you know, innovation that happens in the marketplace or even personal innovation, right? If we're not stepping in and disrupting our own life and trying to grow purposefully and trying to challenge ourselves to do new things, we're eventually going to begin dying, because if you're not growing, you're dying.
Right.
And that begins by taking small calculated risks to move in a new direction and to challenge yourself to grow in strategic ways.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the antidote of fear is what? Like if someone's listening to us right now and they're like, yep, that sounds about like me. I'm staying close to the herd. I'm in the trench. I have a fear of failure. What is it positive? Do they say to themselves, we'll just try it anyway? Do they find someone else that might, like what kind of practical steps are there to kind of get yourself out of that fear hole?
Yeah, well, I love the way you describe that, the fear hole, right? Because that's what it feels like. Like when you're in that place of fear and you're facing a problem, or maybe in your work, you want to try new things, but it feels like you're in a hole and you can't see the way out of it. And the way out of it is small strategic steps. It's small strategic risks that you take. And sometimes those have to happen outside of the context of work, right? Sometimes you can't experiment on the company's dime. And so there's a practice that I talk about in the book called unnecessary creating. And this practice, the reason that I prescribe it is because it allows people to try things outside of the work environment, experiment with new skills, learn new skills, develop new skills, try new things on their own time, on their own dime, right? And develop that capacity for courage in their work outside of the work environment when they're not on somebody else's dime. And then they can come back and apply those skills to the workplace. But it allows for that sort of petri dish of development and for courage to kind of become a part of the ethic of how they work outside of the context where they feel like, wow, if I mess up, you know, it's my job on the line. And I think that's what keeps a lot of us close to the herd, is that we really don't want to be in a place where we're trying things in an environment where it's so risky or it feels so risky. So having those small strategic experiments outside of your day-to-day work can be very effective in helping you build confidence and courage and develop aptitudes and skills that you can then apply to the workplace environment.
Mm.
You know, so strategic experimentation, I think, would probably be the best way to describe that.
And I think of people who, you know, I think of our listening audience. There's a lot of people right now who aren't even in a workplace. You know, they're taking care of kids or whatever. So perhaps when we come back from the break, as we get into the meat of Accidental Creative, maybe we can make that bridge real quickly about
How
do I get out of my family environment to perhaps think creatively about how to leave my family or how to be a better mom or those kind of things. Because I think the skills and the insights you have in the book apply even in that realm as well, not just in a corporate sense. So maybe we can answer that question when we get back. And then I'm excited to get into the heart of the book. So we're with Todd Henry right now. He is the author of The Accidental Creative, How to Be Brilliant at a Moment's Notice. We hope you're having a good Saturday morning out there this morning. And we hope you'll come back right after this break. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob. That's Beth. We're with Todd. See you in a few minutes.
Do Do you have a family member who's getting older and can no longer be safely left alone? Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care, assists senior citizens and adults to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Visiting Angels has over 400 franchised locations across the nation. Experienced, compassionate caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meal preparation, and light housework up to 24 hours a day. Rates are affordable, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. Visiting Angels has cared for hundreds of thousands of seniors nationwide. Franchises are available. Call Visiting Angels toll-free today at 877-374-LIVE. To find an office near you, visit www.visitingangels.com. For home care for your loved ones, call Visiting Angels now at 877-374-LIVE. That's Visiting Angels, America's choice in home care at 877-374-LIVE.
Energy, immunity, vitality. We all want it. Hi, I'm Mike Buck for Nature Bee Plant Pollen. It's the answer. Try the Health Wonder from Down Under. Easy to digest because of our proprietary potentiation process. Broken cell wall technology makes it bioavailable, so it goes buzzing right into your body. Stay mentally sharp. Meet the demands of the day with Nature Bee, fresh from the hives in clean, green New Zealand. A superfood, free from petrochemicals, additives, preservatives, fillers, binders, sugar. No gluten, no dairy. Even diabetics can enjoy Nature Bee. Forget the handful of stuff you're taking already. Simple solution, 2 capsules a day of Nature Bee. You call toll-free to New Zealand. Get a 6-month supply right now for $99.95 plus delivery. 3 extra months for free with Nature Bee's unconditional money-back guarantee. Come on, healthy goodness, praise in the Bible, 37 cents a day. Toll-free, 1-866-834-8355. Or easier yet, collect your Nature Bee online at the website. Nature Bee, that's naturebee.com.
If becoming or staying debt-free is important to you, you're not alone. 10 years ago, I was worried sick, overwhelmed with debt, and so tired of not having enough at the end of the month to make ends meet. I was working a full-time job, but getting deeper in debt every month, and I hated being away from my children. I finally said, that's enough, and I made a decision to do whatever it took to get free from the terrible debt that was causing me so much stress. I'm Gina Neef, and I want to invite you to find the same financial freedom that I found. Not only did I pay my way out of debt, I was also able to leave my corporate job and work from home and be completely available to my family. For years now, I've worked part-time hours, making more than a full-time job would ever pay. I remember the pain of being in over my head, and I'll never forget the joy of becoming debt-free. That's why I show others how to do the same. If you're ready to work from home and find financial freedom, then I'm eager to show you how. Go to findingfreedomnow.com. Discover how you can get free from debt. Go to findingfreedomnow.com.
Mary could get away with being an awful person because she was a killer salesperson. So when Mary leveled outbursts at some poor soul, her bosses just looked away. As for her co-workers, they kept their distance. All but Sandra, who could manage a kind attitude for anyone, Mary included. No real surprise, then, that when Sandra had a personal crisis, who showed up first and helped the most? Right, Mary. Not long after, a new side of Mary emerged at work, too. A better side. This is Howard Butt Jr. of Laity Lodge. Odd as it seems, the best way to reap kindness, even from rock-hard soil, is to sow kindness in the first place, in the high calling of our daily work.
For more information, visit ourdailywork.org.
Welcome back. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob Hall, along with Beth Kuchenberger. Our guest today, Todd Henry. He is the head guru. He is the giant. He is the founder. He is everything about Accidental Creative. We are glad to have him here, and I hope that you are having a great Saturday morning wherever you are. Right before the break, Todd, we were talking a little bit about sort of the businessman, the entrepreneur who needs to sort of be given permission outside of the workplace to be creative. That kind of gets the juices flowing, perhaps, you know, the creative juices flowing. And I pose the question, how does somebody who perhaps their job is to take care of the family, how do they get out of their environment to be creative, to feel like, hey, I can now go back in and think differently about how to do this?
Yeah, I think it's so funny because I think so many of the dynamics that are experienced in the workplace are unbelievably similar in the home environment, only amplified probably 500 times, right, because of what's at stake and because of the pressure that you feel to make sure that, everybody has what they need. And, you know, we use this phrase create on demand, right, when we talk about the workplace. That's what we feel. Well, that pressure to create on demand is amplified, I think, in the home, because you're living your life based upon the demands of everybody in your environment and trying to create some sort of structure and some sort of environment of provision and safety there. And so, you know, I think my biggest piece of advice would be to make sure that in the midst of all of that, in the midst of trying to meet the demands of the environment and sort of be on 24/7 and having to be brilliant at a moment's notice and solve problems,
absolutely,
make sure that you're building structure for yourself. Make sure that you're carving off time for yourself for self-development, time for personal development to pursue your curiosity, time to develop, you know, your mind and to pursue those things that stimulate you intellectually, right, and to develop skills that are important to you, and maybe that will come back and benefit your family as a whole, right? But I think one of the things that unfortunately that I see a lot of times in you know, a parent who is primarily their job is in the home, is that they don't carve off time for themselves. Everything's about everybody else, right? And when that happens, when you're constantly on call 24/7, basically at the demand of others that you're trying to serve in that environment, you know, you always put yourself last.
Right.
And unfortunately, that sometimes makes you less effective when you have to be there, right, to provide that support and structure for the family. So.
Well, I love how you framed this conversation at the very beginning of the show, that being creative is about problem solving. And I don't know anybody, number one, who doesn't have a problem to solve, but I certainly don't know anybody who has more problems to solve, perhaps, for example, than my wife or someone whose primary job is to take care of everybody's demands in the home. I mean, that is a constant problem-solving process. And so I love how you couch that at the beginning of the conversation, that this being accidentally creative, being an accidental creative, how to be brilliant, is applicable to not just people who are artists and business people or whatever, but anybody who has problems to solve. So,
yeah, Ted, I'm a mother of 9 children. And so, you know, I'm always trying to create an environment where children at various ages with various interests and various personal struggles have the ability and space in my home to say their idea, even if it's different than someone else's or whatever. We do it in a variety of ways. One silly thing we do is every week I buy something at the grocery store that I think no one has eaten before, and we all try it just, you know, to say we did. But I want to know, as a mom, just like, is there any practical question or set of questions that you ask yourself or that we could ask ourselves or our children when they get stuck in, you know, a interpersonal conflict with their friend or a homework assignment, or, you know, is there some kind of, like, I'm not looking for a magic bullet, but is there something, a question you could ask that would begin kind of that brainstorming process?
Yeah, I think one of the most important things that my wife and I are trying to instill in our 3 children is to help them be problem solvers, right? And that begins by defining the problem. And I think if you cannot define the problem that you're trying to solve, and look, with kids, this is really difficult because a lot of times they're driven by emotion. You know, they're very reactive sometimes. And we can be very reactive as parents. We get pulled into that world. And I think one of the roles we have to play as parents as it relates to helping our kids be more creative problem solvers is help them step back from the problem, whether it's an interpersonal problem with somebody at school or if it's a homework problem that they're trying to solve, it's especially vexing, and ask them, what are we really trying to do here, right? Don't get so far down the rabbit hole. Don't get so emotionally engaged with this problem until you step back and ask yourself, why am I working on this to begin with? What's the real issue here, right? So, you know, if it's a conflict with someone, okay, well, what's the source of that conflict, and what are we really trying to do here? Are we trying to win this conflict, or are we trying to make sure that everybody feels valued and that at the end of the day that this problem is resolved that we're arguing about, right? It's that typical third conversation thing. And all creative problem solving begins by defining the problem. If you haven't defined the problem, then you cannot effectively solve the problem. And that goes for interpersonal conflicts with, you know, our children, or, you know, at a large strategic level in an organization, you know, the boardroom level. It all begins with answering the question, what are we really trying to do? And then we can begin to put systems in place and put our mental energies against trying to solve that problem. And, you know, when it comes to being effective and brilliant in a moment's notice, I mean, really, there's kind of a framework that I teach to people, and it spells the acronym FRESH, F-R-E-S-H. And the first, I call this the elements of creative rhythm, right? Because creativity, people tend to think of it as this mystical, elusive force that sits somewhere between prayer and the U.S. tax code on the ambiguity scale. It's this thing that occasionally we come across an idea and we're like, hey, brilliant, I have an idea. But the reality is that we can build structures and practices into our life that make us more effective when we need to be effective. And the way we do that is by building a consistent rhythm in our life that supports our creative process outside of the work that we're normally doing. So there are five elements of that. The first is focus. And focus is all about defining the problem. And, you know, a lot of times when we have a creative problem, we tend to jump straight to how. How am I going to solve this? How am I going to move forward with this project? But we haven't stepped back and defined the problem that we're trying to solve, the who, the what, the when, the where, the why, right? And the more data we can put around that structure strategically before we jump straight into solving the problem, the better we're positioning our minds to use their resources, that what they do really well, which is pattern forming and problems. It's what our minds do really well, right? But if we haven't defined the problem with enough of a framework, then we're not giving our minds what they need to be able to solve the problem effectively. So you asked about, you know, children, like we do this with our kids. We'll step back and say, okay, before you jump into solving this problem, let's step back and let's define the problem. Let's make sure we understand what we're trying to do. And you have to do that consistently with your work in your life on a macro level and on a micro level in order to make sure you understand what you're really trying to do. And, you know, the funny thing is once you do that, you begin to see connecting points between a lot of the problems in your life that seem disconnected. You start realizing, wow, I'm actually solving a common problem here. This looks like 50 different problems, but it's actually three different problems that are playing out in a bunch of different ways. So that's focus, and there are some practices that you can build into your life in that way as well.
I noticed one of those practices that just speaks to me and probably to a lot of people. You talk in the book about the ping.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that takes away focus.
Absolutely.
Right? Tell us about what the ping is.
Yeah, so the ping is, I actually gave a name to this dynamic because it was so oppressive in my life and so present. The ping is that little pinprick in my gut that I get every so often that says, hey, you should go check your email right now, right? Or you should go check your Twitter feed, or you should go check your phone because maybe the President of the United States is calling you with a national security crisis, right? It's this sense in my gut that something out there is more important than whatever's in front of me. And I think that we're living now in an age where we're constantly being pinged by all these devices, by all of these different services, and we're living with this constant sense that, hey, maybe something out there is more important than what's in front of me. But when that happens, it fractures our focus. It prevents us from delving deeply into the work that we're trying to do. And it creates this state, as Linda Stone calls it, of continuous partial awareness. Mm. We're always kind of here, but we're kind of somewhere else, right? So whether you're in a boardroom, you know, my friend Ricardo calls this ghosting, you know, where people are kind of like they're sitting in a meeting, but they have their smartphone under the table. And
I would never do that.
They're kind of here, but they're kind of somewhere else. You know, and this happens in the home, right? How many families struggle with mom or dad getting home at the end of the day, and they've just come from work, and mom or dad are sitting at the dinner table, and they're trying to have a conversation, and you know, the smartphone's under the table, and you know, we all struggle with it, you know, because it's the sense that I need to be somewhere else. And unfortunately, when that happens, it fractures our focus and it prevents us from delving deeply into the work that we're doing. And it doesn't allow our minds to do the kind of work that they're great at doing, which is delving deeply into problems and solving patterns.
Yeah.
Because we're constantly fracturing our focus.
And I don't want to just tell everybody everything in the book. There's some great structures in the book about how to maintain your focus.
Yeah.
Right. And so without going into great detail, buy the book. I mean, it's in there. So real quick, before we go to a break in a minute, you had focus. R is
relationships. And many of us only have relationships of obligation or convenience, right? But we don't purposefully build relationships into our life that challenge us and stimulate us to see problems and opportunities in the way that we could see them if we had relationships in our life that are speaking those opportunities into our life. So we need to be purposeful about the kinds of relationships that we're building in our life to stimulate us, challenge us to see the world in new ways, and to help us see our life through a different lens.
Yeah. Well, we're talking with Todd Henry, and I'm energized. We've only got to F and R so far. We still have ESH to go. So you got to come back for that. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob Hall, along with Beth Guckenberger, our guest today, author of Accidental Creative, Todd Henry. We'll be back in 1 minute, and you should be back with us. We'll see you then.
Last October, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to Nigeria, where I had a chance to meet the boy I sponsored through back-to-back. The moment I met him, it became real that Jeremiah was not just a boy in a picture. He was a boy with dreams, hopes, and a story just like my own kids. At that moment, I saw how back-to-back is changing the lives of orphans around the world. I realized that in the same way I'm here for my children to be part of their stories, I can also be part of Jeremiah's. In the same way that my children can be a brother or sister to each other, they can care for Jeremiah. They can write him letters and share their stories as they grow up. We can help him to receive an education and food to fill his stomach. But more importantly, we can be involved in his life and encourage him to follow his dreams. I learned that sponsoring a child through back-to-back is not just about financial support for an orphan. It is about allowing God to intertwine your story and your heart with a child in need. For more information on sponsoring an orphan like Jeremiah through back-to-back, contact 513-754-0300 or email at childsponsorship@back2back.org.
Welcome back. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob Hall, along with Beth Kuchenberger, and our guest today, author, founder, guru of Accidental Creative, Todd Henry. And right before the break, we got into, so we've been talking today, if you're just joining us, we've been talking about that creativity is really problem solving, and all of us have problems to solve. And so, as Todd mentioned at the beginning of the show, you know, we tend to think of creative as artistic, and that isn't necessarily the case. And so what we did right before the break, we started talking about some structures, some rhythms to put into your life that spell out the acronym FRESH. F was focus, R was relationship, and now we're on to E. So, Todd, welcome back.
Thanks.
Keep us going.
Yeah, and E is energy. And, you know, we are wonderful at managing time. So we stack meeting after meeting after meeting, or obligation after obligation. And we get to the end of the day, and we need to have an idea, and we have nothing left because we have not been managing our energy effectively. And we have to be conscious of that, right? Because energy is one of the trifecta, focus, time, and energy. It's one of the most important things we bring to the creative process. So one practice that I talk about in the book is the practice of pruning. You know, in a vineyard, one of the primary roles of the vine keeper is to regularly prune the vine of areas of new growth. Now, why would you prune perfectly good new fruit off the vine? Well, it's because the vine keeper knows that if that fruit isn't pruned, it will eventually begin to steal resources from the older, more mature fruit-bearing parts of the vine, because the vine is not made to sustain that much fruit. It simply cannot provide that much resource to the fruit. And so over time, the entire vine will succumb to mediocrity, right, if it's not regularly pruned. And the same principle applies in our life. We're not made to bear that much fruit, right? So we have to regularly prune projects that may be really good, but not necessarily for right now.
Oh, that is so hard. That is the hardest letter of them all for me, because it's hard to know what and how to prune the activities of your life. Like, how do you know? What is it, the latest project needs pruned, or the project that drives the bulk of your energy, or how do you know what to prune?
Well, I think that if we go back to focus, right? Like, what am I trying to do with my life? What is it that's really important? Where do I really need to be focusing my mental energy and my time? And I think that has to provide the matrix for you to make the decision about what needs to be pruned. The reality is that a lot of really good ideas need to be pruned. A lot of really super great ideas need to go on the back burner simply because you don't have the resources to deal with them right now. And that's the hardest thing, especially for people who are creative, because we don't or who are entrepreneurial. We don't struggle with new ideas. We don't struggle with new fruit on the vine, but the reality is we have a limited amount of energy at our disposal, and if we're not wise about pruning those things out of our life, then eventually we'll find we're becoming less effective at everything.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So S is for stimuli, and stimuli are all the things that go into your head that inform your creative process, that become the raw materials for your creative process. But again, many of us are less than purposeful about the kinds of things that we put into our head, right? Like, not all of us are sitting around listening to Real Talk, you know.
Which is,
you know, that would be obviously number one, right?
Yes, absolutely. Podcast.
But, you know, instead, a lot of people are sitting around, you know, watching random YouTube videos, watching Jersey Shore. Not that there's anything wrong with that. Actually, there's a lot, but we won't go there, right? But we're not filling our head with things that are challenging, stimulating, causing us to see the world in new ways. And we have to do that. We have to develop our mind, this wonderful tool that we've been given, right? We have to develop our mind if we want to be effective, if we want to have great ideas. And the more we do that, the more we fill our head with stimulating, inspiring, challenging, resources, the more we begin to think systemically, the more we begin to see connecting points between things. And that's what creativity is. It's connecting two seemingly unconnected ideas and forming them together into one idea that solves the problem you're working on.
Mm-hmm.
So that's S, that's stimuli. And then H is hours, right?
Mm-hmm.
And hours is all about where we spend our time. But unfortunately, we often think about efficiency with our time rather than effectiveness. So again, we'd rather stack meeting after meeting after meeting, but we're neglecting the practices that, while they seem really inefficient, maybe in the moment, actually make us more effective over the long term. You know, things like we talked about earlier, unnecessary creating.
Mm-hmm.
This idea of doing things that I'm not being paid for, it's not, there's no direct result on what I'm trying to do in my life, but it's developing me, developing skills, it's helping me grow. Maybe it's just feeding my soul in some way, right?
Right.
It's something that I'm making that I'm not being paid for, but it's developing me in ways that maybe my create on demand role, whatever that is, isn't going to develop me.
And the thing, Todd, that I love about what you're talking about and what I love when I read Accidental Creative is this idea of rhythm. It's sort of like the creative process. It, like you said, it's not just an epiphany that shows up one day out of nowhere, that you can be brilliant at a moment's notice if you're following this creative rhythm.
Yeah, and the reality is there's no formula for creativity, right? So what I like to tell people is if you want to be brilliant at a moment's notice, you have to begin far upstream from the moment you need a brilliant idea by building structure into your life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like anything else, if you want a result, you have to prepare for it.
Right.
You have to plant seeds, you have to harvest, you know, all of that. And I think that unfortunately, so many of us are just bouncing from thing to thing, but we're not being purposeful about how we structure our life. And that applies in so many different contexts, right?
Yeah.
But I think especially as it relates to creativity, you're not going to put something in one side, crank a formula, and come out with a creative idea, but you can increase your chances of having ideas if you're more purposeful about how you structure your life.
It seems counterintuitive to a creative person to have to put into structure, but it absolutely is essential. And then it also feels natural to maybe someone who doesn't consider themselves creative to have a structure that if I do this, the chances of me creating something are much greater.
Yeah, but it's, you know, it's funny because some of the greatest, what we would consider the traditional creative minds of all time, have said things like Orson Welles said, the absence of limitations is the enemy of art, right? People who have, these people that we tend to think of as these brilliant creatives, they all embraced limitation. They all embraced structure as a part of their life, and it's just who they are, you know? And so if we want to be effective, we have to focus our creative energies, our time, our focus, relationships, energy, stimuli, hours, and build some structure that will support us in those times when we have to be creative.
Yeah, yeah.
It feels like, kind of as you're describing creativity, like it's like a muscle, and the more you exercise it, the stronger it is in a moment when you might need to pick up something that's heavy. I like that idea that I just like working out. You just constantly kind of, you know, are on that treadmill, making sure that you are in a position and a place of preparedness for when you need to solve the problem.
That's exactly right. And, you know, it's like if you suddenly ran out into your driveway and you had to lift some heavy object, right, but you haven't been preparing for that, if you only use that muscle when you have to use that muscle, it's not going to be ready. It's not going to be prepared. So you're right. It's exactly like a muscle. You have to be training that muscle for that moment when you have to be brilliant. Just like an athlete prepares thousands of hours for every 10 minutes that they're actually engaging in an athletic event, it's the same thing with your creative process. You have to be preparing for those moments when you have to be brilliant.
Well, Todd, I just can't thank you enough for being in studio, coming in. How do people find you? How do people get the book? What's your, you know, where are you in the Twitterverse? Give us all the possible ways that we can find you.
Yes, yeah, so you can find me at accidentalcreative.com. That's my company's website. I also have a personal website at toddhenry.com. Where I blog about more random things, right, whatever comes across my mind. You can find me on Twitter. My handle is Todd Henry, TODDHENRY as well. So you can find me any of those three places.
And I got to say, I love your podcast. Where can they find your podcast?
It's also at accidentalcreative.com. You can find it through iTunes.
Yeah, I get it on iTunes, so love it. Todd, thanks so much for being here. Great stuff. We talked earlier during the banter, or maybe before the banter, sort of about how you have really changed the way that I personally approach my work, and I just appreciate that, and Beth and I banter about it a lot, about how Accidental Creative has really allowed us to focus on the things that are most important and come out the other end with some really cool creative things. So thank you for being here, and thank you for the book, Accidental Creative.
Thank you, and thanks for the great work you guys
do. Absolutely. Todd Henry, how do we get Todd Henry on our show? amazing.
Robert, I just think to myself, I mean, which of those five, you know, focus, relationships, energy, stimulus, hours, which of those is kind of requires the most from you to embrace? Like, what's the hardest for you?
Well, I don't know what's, I can tell what's the hardest for me, but when he started talking about pruning, about, you know, the person who has 7 billion great ideas, I mean, I was like, hey, do you and Beth know each other from a different life or something like that? You are the queen. You have more ideas in a day than I have in a month. So I would imagine that part for you was a good reminder.
It is a good reminder. I mean, it is true. There is only so much nectar in the vine, but it's when the process is as I don't even have words to it. It is disheartening to me. I like to imagine my life as eternal, and it'll just be one opportunity after another until the end of time to continue to develop the things that flow through my mind. But I just even make sense.
Sometimes it feels like that when I'm hanging out with you. It's like, man, we're going to need 1,000 more years to get through all of Beth's great ideas.
Oh, no. Okay, listeners, do not listen to that. I don't really mean all of that. I just mean that I think that that's an important part of the process. I also love the idea that we can create environments in our home life. I mean, of course, I want to be a problem solver, and I want to be creative in my work life, but in my home life with my kids, I want to create an environment that's not just efficient, that is also effective. That whole idea that we don't have just convenient relationships, but we have people in our life that might bring us no apparent benefit other than they are challenged. They're challenging to us, and they have ideas, and we're exchanging the ideas. We're not just exchanging, you know, goods and services.
Yeah, the part that I really like about that as well is not only how am I creative, and how do I manage my own flow, my own creative rhythm, but how can I encourage that in kids? You know, as an educator, the biggest thing for me is how education is changing from, you know, hey, we need to know the dates, the times, and all that stuff. Creative problem solving is the education of the future. We don't have any idea what the jobs of the future are. We don't have any idea necessarily the particular skills. Creative problem solving, creating a rhythm like the one that Todd talks about in Accidental Creative, is absolutely imperative if we are going to prepare children for the environment they'll get into. And so that idea is what I really love, is how can we as parents or educators or whatever it is instill in kids, in our houses, in our schools, this idea that, hey, you need to get into creative room, problem solving. How can we do that? That's a great challenge, whether you're a businessman, a parent, or a teacher. So, hey, we only got 1 minute
and
left,
not,
Beth.
We
only got one
know,
minute.
But just
come
not,
on.
I know. I just want to say, as adults, we got to not step in front of them and problem solve for them. You know what I mean?
That's all right.
Got to let them.
You
problem.
Are exactly okay. Right. Hey, I want to give a shout out real quick. You know, you can get our show on BethKuchenberger.com. And I want to thank the over 500,000 people in our first few months on the radio who have gone to BethKuchenberger.com and have downloaded the show. 500,000 people, that's pretty good.
I mean, yes, and I know that last name is, like, not simple. He was always the right boy at the right time. I promise you by that.
That's exactly right. Hey, next week we're going to have a great show. We're going to talk about child sponsorship. Back talking about a little bit about orphan care. Thanks to Todd Henry. Thanks, Beth, all the way from Monterey. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob, and that's Beth, and we will see you next week, same time.